CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, Chantel Decatel will be giving us an update on Boxing Without Barriers.
So what's the latest for Boxing Without Barriers?
So we're continuing to run our in-club programming. We've got classes for athletes with cognitive developmental disabilities. We've got paraboxing classes for athletes with physical disabilities, and the newest sort of boxing development is that there's going to be a para category at the Boxing Canada Nationals coming up in November.
So, for those who might have missed our prior interview, what are some of the methods you use to adapt boxing for those with disabilities?
Boxing's a highly adaptable sport. Despite what it maybe first looks like, especially when it comes to the kind of initial, if you're choosing to take the non-contact pathway, which every boxer starts with regardless, it's a highly adaptable sport. You can do it sitting down, standing up, a mix of both. And because coaches can use pads, use heavy bags, there's a lot of different equipment to practice more or less the same techniques. Boxers can choose what works best for them or what they like to use, and it can really be done in any environment. You can box inside, outside, if you have a pair of pads and a partner. In terms of paraboxing or wheelchair boxing, again, a lot of the skills are more or less the same. Can do it in a manual chair, which involves some more moving around the ring, just like a standing boxer would, or you can do it in a power chair, which is more stationary, but minus the footwork, it's all of the same skill set.
How does a para boxer get the same range as a standing one?
Range is kind of a feature of both how long your arms are and also where you position yourself, right? So if you're boxing in a manual chair and you're moving around, then similar to a standing boxer, you can kind of size up your opponent and figure out if you've got the greater reach or the shorter reach and position yourself accordingly and as you move your chair around. And there are things that even if you're sitting down, you can angle your torso a certain way, and depending on how much trunk rotation people have, you can still kind of get the same reach on your punches. Again, just without using your feet to kind of move you forward and back.
So you mentioned you have a program for athletes with cognitive disabilities. Use any modified training techniques to teach them the sport?
It's very individualized to the athlete and what their goals are. So some boxers come to learn the technical side of the sport. Some boxers come because it's a good workout. Some come because it's a fun time. So depending on what their goals are, and some boxers have a harder time with memory, so we're constantly sort of reinforcing the names of the punches, and other boxers have a harder time with some motor control or coordination, so we might use like a bigger hand pad or a bigger target. But again, it's the same skills. Sometimes it's at a bit of a slower pace, extra reinforcement, some more modeling, some just really solid, good teaching strategies, coaching strategies, and sometimes just like a bit extra bit of repetition that's needed. But more or less, we're just looking to use those good coaching strategies in a way that is best for each boxer.
So when you mentioned coordination and motor control, I'd imagine that practicing these skills would have a benefit in their day-to-day lives with greater use of those muscles and those skills, that this is something that a boxer or an athlete could carry with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think boxing, like most sports, all sports, has a great number of transferable skills, like you said, whether it's because they're a multi-sport athlete or just in their day-to-day life. If their balance and their gait is a little bit improved, that can help with navigating stairs or curbs, and just kind of basic endurance to do things like, run and catch a bus if you need to. Yeah, it's great.
So, in your time with the program, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you that you'd like to share?
We have a lot of successes, big and small, pretty regularly. Just by seeing the boxers develop as they go along. Just kind of recently in the last few weeks, I've seen some of our boxers kind of level up in their skills that I haven't been seeing before. Some boxers this past summer helped me out at some community programs that I was running. So I was going into different camps and things to run boxing classes. And some of my more veteran boxers asked if they could help and assist in demonstrating and helping their peers in that class. So I thought that was a big win, that they're looking to take on more leadership roles as they get older and become one of the older boxers in the club. And then we have things like getting para boxing recognized with Boxing Canada. And I have a couple of athletes who are planning to go to that tournament and have a first boxing match, which will be historic.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep.
In this segment of our show, Guy Berlassi will be telling us a little bit about Wings of Power. So what can you tell me about Wings of Power?
So Wings of Power is a community resource center in Pine Falls, Manitoba. We're about an hour northeast of Winnipeg. Small town, 3,000 people or so. So we serve the low-income families of the community. And we also are host to adults with disabilities. So we have, we call it a day program. So we have 10 clients from the age of 25 to 50. So they come and they work with us throughout the day. So that is our biggest thing. And then we have a thrift store. We have some kids programming, some prenatal, postnatal programming. We do community events like a fall harvest dinner and a breakfast with Santa, summer barbecues, that kind of thing.
So, what?
We also have a thrift store, which is a, I don't know if I mentioned that or not, a big thing that we have in the community.
So, what are some of the benefits of the day program for your clients with disabilities? I'd imagine the whole sense of community aspect is a big one.
Yes, we have about 20 partnerships in the community. From some of them are seasonal, like the golf course or the hockey rink or the curling rink. And others from this partner school, the Catholic Church, the hospital, local businesses. And so our clients and our staff will go to these businesses or organizations, depending on what they do, and they'll volunteer their time there. So they could be sweeping floors. They could do some basic cleaning at the church. They could go and shred paper, that sensitive material at the local offices. Some of them are quite capable. They can work on their own. So they might go to the laundry room at the hospital and work with the laundry staff or do some basic maintenance. So the community in general knows these people quite well because they're out and about all the time. So there's a huge benefit for the adults with disabilities. It gives them a sense of purpose every day to be out in the community and do something worthwhile, right? So they're not sitting at home doing nothing. And the businesses appreciate having them around, doing odd jobs for them, stocking shelves at the grocery store, that kind of thing. So they'll specifically leave work for them to do. So it's a good sense of community. Everyone helps each other.
So the community, I take it, responds typically very positively to having them as part of these businesses, so to speak.
Yeah, we've been part of the community now for, I want to say, 23 years. So we have some of these big businesses, they've been there that long. And, they appreciate us. They know the guys. If any one of our clients is walking down the street, you know, people know who they are. They know where they're from.
So
it is definitely a community-based service that we offer.
So, especially for your clients with disabilities, in your time with Wings of Power, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Oh, we have lots. Our biggest success story, I would say, we have a client named Chris Martin. He has fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and he was specifically chosen to be part of a video series put on by Department of Families out of Winnipeg, where they came and followed him for a few days and saw where he went and worked and where he volunteered and the relationships he had in the community, and made a video out of that that they shared all over the province. So he was actually a little bit famous at a time. He would do some, and still does, speaking engagements for at FASD conferences or any kind of courses where they specifically deal with that kind of thing. So he's probably had, you know, 15 or 20 speaking engagements over the last 5 years in and around here and also in Winnipeg.
So how do you reach
out? We also have other...
So how do you reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that these programs do exist?
So they actually, we don't reach out to anyone. They come to us. All of our clients are funded through the Department of Families in Manitoba. So they will have a case file or caseworker. And depending on where they live, they would contact us and say, hey, so-and-so in the community is looking for a place to work or a place to go, and then we would set them up from there. The issue that we have right now is we're at 10. 10 is our capacity. We're a small building, limited staff, and being a small town, there's so many businesses and partnerships that we have. So we are maxed out at 10. There's probably a wait list of 4 or 5 on that wait list. And the only way right now that they can get in here is if someone leaves our program. And that doesn't generally happen very often. They usually, once they're in, because it's a good program. And all the people in the program are from the community, so they don't have anywhere else to go unless they happen to move away with their parents or something. So unfortunately, that's one of the negative things, is we're at capacity with 10.
So if it were possible, would you want to expand your programs to accommodate more?
Definitely, we talk about it often. We have a board of directors that oversees wings of power. And it's a constant discussion that we have. We are in the process of applying for a license and funding to open another residential home here. I actually didn't mention that. We do all have a residential home in Pine Fall 24/7, and then they come here during the day, Monday to Friday. So there's 3 gentlemen in there right now, and we applied to get funding and a license to get another house for women with disabilities, because there are some in the community that we know of. So that is in the works. The process is long. We're thinking, you know, it could be a year or so before this place is up and running, if we do get the funding. It's all based on if we get the funding or not. And we're always open to having more clients. Like I said, capacity is our driving factor. And staffing can be an issue as well. Industry in Manitoba has a super high turnover rate in this industry, working with adults with disabilities, basically because they don't pay as high as a healthcare aide or a education assistant at a school. They're probably paid $2 or $3 an hour less. So that's kind of who we compete with for staffing. So that staffing is an issue at times. Right now, we're solid. Right now, the last 2 years, we're pretty solid. But it is a general issue throughout the province.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
U Windsor students, are you hungry for more than knowledge? The U Windsor Food Pantry is open to all students with a valid U Windsor ID. They're open Monday to Thursday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The food pantry is located in room 233 of the CAW Student Center, next to the UWSA main office. The food pantry seeks to take a bite out of food security concerns with food aid assistance. Book an appointment online at uwsa.ca under services, or give them a call at 519-253-3000, extension 3504. Tuition is rising, costs keep mounting, and you shouldn't have to choose between food, rent, or textbooks. The campus food pantry, located at room 233 of the CAW Student Center.
Back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Guy Borlase told us a little bit about Wings of Power, and we got an update on Boxing Without Barriers from Chantel Decatel. In this segment of our show, Donnie L. Watkins will be telling us a little bit about the Dreams Foundation. So what can you tell me about the Dreams Foundation?
The Dreams Foundation was an organization that was started out of really a necessity when we realized that there wasn't any organizations offering any kind of activities to individuals with special needs. So and even then, we didn't really set out to start an organization. We set out to have a simple baseball game. And after having a baseball game, my son wanted to know when basketball was going to start. So it just kind of ended up going into this one activity after the other, and the Dreams Foundation came out of it because we realized that we couldn't take donations without having a nonprofit in place.
So what are some of the benefits for persons with special needs and disabilities to be engaged in community activities such as baseball and other sports?
So the biggest thing is that especially if you have siblings, they're doing their baseball, their basketball, their art, whatever it is. And so that was my son. He said, well, when am I going to do these things? And it simply wasn't offered. So we did not want to tell them, you can't do those things. So that's why we started doing that. So a sense of inclusion is the first thing. But also a sense of accomplishment would be another. And then on top of all of that, which was a benefit that we never really thought about, was the parents' enjoyment of seeing those kids so happy doing what they love to do, whatever that may be. And that's kind of another reason that the Dreams Foundation kept getting bigger and bigger, was people wanted all of the different types of activities, because why shouldn't they have a choice as to what they wanted to participate in?
So how do you reach out to the disability community to let them know the foundation is out there?
That is probably one of the disadvantages, I guess I'll say, is that people have to come looking, and then they have to know where to look. And so we're on the internet, we're on Facebook, and we're on in a lot of different places. But there's two things. There's fear of, will my child fit in, and will my child be able to do it, and do I want to risk them getting turned away? And then the other is finding us. You know what? We don't spend a lot on advertising. We spend on the activities themselves. So that is a problem that we try to get out there as much as possible. Get on TV, get on any kind of platform, and then word of mouth is probably our best way for people to find us.
So, in your time with the foundation, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Probably one of the couple stories, but one of the stories is having a mom coming up to me saying, you know, my child was born with, was never even diagnosed what she had, but she just wasn't normal. And so they started telling me all the things she wasn't going to do. And a lot of those things that they said she wasn't going to do, she is in fact doing and doing really well. One of them being a cheerleader. We have a special needs cheerleading group. And she said, I would have never thought, and neither would that doctor who told me all these things she wasn't going to do, would have never thought that she would be a cheerleader and be the head of the cheerleaders at that. So that was, you know, a really pivotal moment for me, realizing that we are making a big difference. And then whenever we opened our factory, which we make meat pies at, for one of the kids coming up saying that, I never thought I'd have a job that I never thought I'd have a job, but never thought I'd have a job where I truly thought I was making a difference. You know, and in his mind, he's making the meat pies and serving up the people, and that's his difference. Doesn't matter how big or how small, it's the fact that he feels purpose.
So, I'm curious about the factory you mentioned. What was the inspiration behind that, and giving opportunities to folks with disabilities?
Well, as we started in 2007, and as everyone does, and 10 years later, we had all these kids that were becoming adults, and they wanted jobs. And, you know, there's a few around town, you know, that you can, if you know somebody, you can get them in. But for the most part, they're not being able to work, and they want to work. They know that their parents go to work, their brothers and sisters go to work. They want to go to work. So I was having a board meeting one day, and I said, guys, we need to find a way to make people aware that our kids want jobs, and they're just as able to do a job, a simple job, as other people are, and will do it with great enthusiasm. So my board member came up to me after. He said, "I think I have something for you." And I was like, "Okay." He said, "I have a guy in Natchez, Louisiana, which is north of us, that makes meat pies, and he wants to retire." And I was like, "You think we could do that?" He said, "Yes." He said, "I think we can. Let's go to the factory and check it out." And so I went, and as I saw the simple jobs that they were doing, now they couldn't cook the food, but once the food was cooked, they could assemble it. And so after I saw that, I was like, okay, this is something we might be able to do. It took us a whole year because we had to go into USDA inspection. And I mean, it was definitely a task, but God led us through and opened up every door we needed to get it open and to, we first started selling to jails, and now we're in stores, and we have a food truck. And, although we don't make much money, in fact, we don't make any money right now, we're basically running out of loss. Eventually, I know it will turn, and the kids will continue to get more employees and grow, and other people will notice and start hiring our kids. So that's the hope.
So, if you could send any message to the community of the need for equal inclusion, what would you say?
I would say that everyone should have a chance to fail or a chance to succeed. Please give anyone that wants to work a chance to succeed, and they will probably blow out anything you expect.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Love those last couple of stories there, and so much as I always love hearing about disability-led businesses, finding a way to allow individuals who never thought they could achieve in this world to contribute to society in a meaningful way. And I love that story about girl who became the cheerleader. But the fact is, a disability is not a limitation. It is not the world saying you can't or won't do this. A lot of people do love imposing their own expectations, their own value sets on persons with disabilities. However, as I've always said, medical science is a great baseline, but it is not something that factors in strength, resolve, or even the support networks of the individual. Sometimes the only real difference between being able to achieve a full and meaningful life and one where you underestimate yourself constantly is someone telling you, try this, or you can be that. And honestly, we don't want to set it in stone. A person with a disability is told too often they can't or won't achieve. Chances are, sooner or later, that'll become cemented in them. It doesn't need to be there. If a person is built up and given a reasonable chance to succeed, with expectations geared to their skill sets and their capabilities, chances are they will not only rise to the challenge, the occasion, chances are they will surpass all expectations. Having been told these things myself, that I would never accomplish X, Y, and Z, if I could look back and give myself but one piece of advice, I would say, just don't listen. Somebody's bound and determined to tear you down and tell you what you won't achieve. The first thing you should do, and far too few of us do this, is ask the question, who is this person to me? Are they the all-defining authority on the subject? Have they lived my life? Do they know my responses? Do they know the people who are going to support me and help me come up with innovative ways to succeed? If the answer is no, try it for yourself. Explore your own potential. You might find a lot more is possible than the world likes to look upon. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.